Welcome to another episode of Points on the Board. This is your host, Big John, and I'm joined by two NBA experts for today's show. We're going to introduce them in a second, but just to let you know, William Del Pilar, my Latinx buddy there, he's not hosting tonight. He's not even on the show because he's attending to other business. But you know what the old saying is, the show must go on, and indeed it will. So right now, let me introduce to you our favorite NBA analyst, Mr. Dennis Velasco. Now, usually, William would give you a long list of his accomplishments, but here's the two you need to know. He's OG Sports Grumblings basketball editor from back in the day. What could be more important than that? Nothing, I say, nothing. But right now, he's running Basketball State of Mind. He's got a Substack. Go to basketballsom.substack.com. Sign up for the newsletter. You can't get much better when it comes to NBA wisdom than Mr. Dennis Velasco. Well, maybe, let me take that back, Dennis. Maybe you can get some wisdom, up-and-coming wisdom. What's stronger than genetics, yo? Holden Velasco is also joining us. He's Dennis's possibly eclipsing son. He's eclipsing the old man, I think, a little bit. And let me talk about Holden here because both – I mean, you could understand his father being proud of him, but I'm proud of this kid too. I've known him for a while. He's a great kid. I shouldn't even say kid anymore. He's a great young man doing his thing, making his way in the journalism world. Let me just say that Holden is an editorial intern at Slam Magazine this past spring. He's currently a contributing writer to SB Nation's Nets Daily, and he's the sports editor and webmaster of his college newspaper, The Night News. And he wanted me to say this. He is also, unfortunately, Dennis Velasco's son. Dennis.
Yeah, I think I got the looks. I mean, that's the only thing.
That?
I got looks over him.
No way.
I don't know.
I'm your future son.
I don't know.
Dennis,
be determined.
Dennis, what's up with this young pup, son? He's already ragging on the old man. What's going on, yo?
You know what? We're from New York, man. You know how it is.
You're always ranking,
no matter what. That's all good.
Got to stay tough. Got to stay tough when you're from the Big Apple, even if you're not there right now.
That's true.
What can you say? You got to carry that. You got to represent that toughness to the rest of the country, yo. But anyway. Like I said, this is going to be an NBA show. We're going to focus on NBA free agency, the goings-on, talk about some winners and losers. And like I said, I'm very fortunate. I've got two NBA experts here with me tonight. So let's start it off with probably the biggest news in the free agency period thus far, and that would be the trade of Rudy Gobert from the Jazz to the T-Wolves. Now I'm gonna have to bring over my notes because this was a huge trade, fellas. So let me lay it out, and then I'm gonna let you guys talk about it. The Jazz sent Gobert to the T-Wolves. In return, they get Malik Beasley, Patrick Beverley, Jared Vanderbilt.
Yes.
Oh, having a tough time talking. Leandro Bolmaro, Walker Kessler, the number 22 pick in. They got the number 22 pick in this just draft that just passed. They also got unprotected first-round picks in 23, 25, and 27. And they have a top-five protected pick coming to them from Minnesota in 2029. That's not a typo, by the way. We're already talking 7 years out. They've already – so basically, every odd year between now and 2029 – The Jazz stand to get the T-Wolves first-round pick. For Rudy Gobert, now, guys, check me if I'm wrong here. Gobert's a great player, good player, but he's in nobody's top five, is he, Dennis?
No, and let me just say this first. The top story during this free agency period is Kevin Durant requesting a trade from the Brooklyn Nets.
We're going to get to that.
But it hasn't happened, so
right. –
The top story that actually happened would be the Gobert trade. And, you know, I think Gobert, the reason why he costs that much is because he is a game changer. I mean, he's not my favorite player, but he's a game changer because he protects the rim. He can get rebounds. You know, he alters shots. Was it too much? In my opinion, it was. But the good thing about this, being a Nets fan, is that we sort of get – an indicator of what Durant will be worth. But I'll throw it over to Holden. Holden, what do you think about how much the Minnesota Timberwolves gave up?
So obviously, being a Nets fan, like you said, the first thing I thought is, oh, great, this drives up Durant's price point. But if you want to look at it like this, they essentially gave up six first-rounders for him, right? You got the three unprotected and the top five protected. Then you have the Walker Kessler, who was 22 last year or in the last draft. The year before that was Bamara, who was the 22nd pick, I believe, also as well, coincidentally. So in that case, you were basically giving up six first-rounders for Gobert. And like you said, game-changer. But the issue with him is he wasn't too much on offense. He was in the dunker position. He was there for the lobs. Now, obviously, he's beyond a game changer on the defensive end. He's probably the best interior defender we've had in the past decade, maybe even more so than that. So, you know, you have that alongside Karl-Anthony Towns, who I'm sure we'll get into. But six first-rounders for a fringe all-NBA player, I don't know if I would do it personally, especially because now you're throwing out Patrick Beverley, who gave his heart and soul to that team. Now, right. Granted, the NBA is a business. Pat said it himself, and we know this. But I think the price point was too high on Gobert that they gave up.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's interesting because when I looked at it, I said, okay, even if you're drooling, if you're a Minnesota fan and you're drooling at the prospect of putting Gobert at center, moving Towns out to the forward spot, and he's a good three-point shooter, right? He's a good shooter, Towns. So now you have a different dynamic, right? You have two big guys on defense. But the price, I mean, we could pick out good players if we don't have to worry about price, right? But that always has to factor into it. And I kind of liken this to the Browns signing Deshaun Watson for $230 million, all of it guaranteed, right? And so now not only are you on the line, but like you guys also kind of alluded to with the Nets, every other team in the NBA must be going like, what the hell did you guys just do? You just – if this guy's a fringe top 10 player, fringe top 10 player in the NBA, what are the top 10 players going to demand from us now? Like, we can't even get rid of him because who's going to pay this sort of bounty? Like, do you guys think this is a one-off or do you think this is just – a sign of things to come? Because like you said, if the Nets said, okay, we're willing to move Durant, but hey, we want eight first round picks and we want your top five players coming off your on your team right now for Durant, is that unreasonable? Or is the rest of the league just going to say, hey, we got to draw a line in the sand somewhere, and this was obviously nuts? I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Dennis?
Well, I mean, it's not really a one-off. When you look at what the Oklahoma City Thunder got for trading Paul George just, a couple of years ago. It was a lot, ton of draft picks, you know what I mean? But, Durant, you're not going to trade him for, the five starters. It's sort of like Kobe Bryant. There was a chance for him, during his free agency where he could have gone to the Bulls, right? But the trade was too much, where if the Bulls did trade for Kobe Bryant, they'd be giving up a ton.
Right.
And Kobe Bryant was like, no, I don't want to go there. Not for that trade, because if I go there, I'm not going to contend because all those pieces are being traded away. And I think that's going to be the same thing with Durant. He's not going to want to go somewhere. Not that it's up to him because he's on the contract for 4 years, but he's not going to want to go to a team where you're stripping core players that can contend.
Yeah, and Holden, Gobert is 30, right? So how does that play into it? Did they overpay for a guy who's, is he still on the up, or is he starting to plateau and start facing down the roller coaster there?
Well, I think at this point, age isn't too much of a factor because his play hasn't really decreased over the few seasons. But what I think is interesting is Cat has been playing the four this past season with Vanderbilt playing that five, both on offense and defense. So now you put in Gobert in that dunker spot at the five instead of Vanderbilt. Obviously a humongous upgrade. But I think with the Timberwolves now, a lot of the offensive output is going to be on Anthony Edwards. D'Angelo Russell has to show up. But what I really like about this trade is the D'Lo Gobert pick and roll. D'Lo is an amazing pick and roll guard, and Gobert is an amazing roller. So I think we will see a lot more action of that with possibly a 3-and-D wing in the corner or Anthony Edwards in the corner with the pick and roll going that way, Gobert rolling down, and seeing what D'Lo can create.
Yeah, I think what's cool is, like you mentioned, you know, the pick and roll with D'Lo. You know, if D'Lo does that with Karl Anthony Towns, now you also have a pick and pop. You know, the thing with Karl Anthony Towns, he can pick and roll and he can pick and pop. You know, Gobert is a little more limited, obviously. But if you're the defense and you see that, you see these 2 7-footers rolling down. It's like, how do you guard that? You know what I mean? So it's going to work out for the Timberwolves in the short term. There's no question. As you mentioned, they're trading away, you know, draft picks all the way up to 2029. But at this point, you know, the T-Wolves, I guess they feel like they can contend. So they need to get that, you know, game changer that'll put them over the top. But when you're playing in the Golden State Warriors conference, I don't know. It's going to be rough.
I was going to say, you make a move like this, you expect to win it all, right? You don't make this type of move just to make the playoffs, right? You make this type of move to get the trophy, to get the brass ring, right? And I just heard from you, Dennis, you don't think so. What about you, Holden? Is this a move that gets them a trophy next year, this upcoming season?
Well, first I want to say, you know, with the picks of, they're not going to be valuable. Look how good they're going to be. We said that about the Nets when we traded into Houston. Now, look, we're crumbling, and who knows what's going to happen. But the value of the picks, there's a lot that can change in 3 years. But I don't think this wins them a championship, I'm going to be honest. Mm-hmm. Unless they add much more depth, I don't really see it happening.
All right. You know, you take away Malik Beasley, he's like a 20-point scorer right there. You know what I mean? You're taking away Patrick Beverley, big-time culture guy. You know, right. And that can make a difference for a team. So, you know, the Timberwolves trading all that, and I remember when they won the first round in the playoffs, they were celebrating like they won the championship.
Right.
You know, I know they want to do that in a real life where they win the championship, but with Curry, Clay, Draymond, and, you know, possibly even Durant now, because there are rumors, there's no way they're going to win. They're not going to celebrate like that again. But overall, I would give the winners on this is definitely the Jazz. And, you know, kudos to Danny Ainge, able to swindle another team out of, like, a ton of draft picks the way he did when he was at the Boston Celtics and traded away KG, Paul Pierce, and Jason Terry to the Brooklyn Nets and got all their picks that basically turned out into, like, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tate. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. Right. Danny Ainge is he's like he works with the devil, I think. He definitely works with the devil.
but in a good way, you're saying. Like you got to admit that he's been able to swindle two different franchises, right?
Yeah.
Not swindle's the wrong word, but maximize his assets in a trade. With two separate franchises. Like, it's one thing if you go to the well for the same guy over and over again.
Right.
But that's not the case here. Okay, so I'm kind of gathering from both of you. You both feel the Jazz came out on top in this trade, and I guess the consensus around the horn here is this was not a championship move by the T-Wolves. So we'll see how that goes for them. All right, let's move on. I want to talk about winners and losers. And let's start off with teams as winners or losers. I'm going to throw out some teams at you. You guys tell me. Let's start off with the 76ers. They picked up P.J. Tucker. They reworked Harden's contract to free up some room. And they picked up Daniel House. Let's start with Holden. Holden, what do you feel about the moves? Like, feeling strong about that? Trying to figure out what they did? Did they solve their issues from last season? What do you got on that?
Well, first off, I was surprised that Harden declined his option and actually allowed the Sixers to get more financial flexibility.
Right.
I mean, good for him. You're a better person than me. I would just take the money. But looking at the moves that the Sixers have made, it looks like they're trying to recreate that 2018 Rockets team. Remember that? Only three-pointers, only layups. Here's some buzzword names. Chris Paul, Erica Gordon, Ryan Anderson, Trevor Ariza, P.J. Tucker, and Daniel House. You know, with PJ, he was coming off debatably the best year of his career at the age of 36.
He shot 42% from three, best of his career. Second highest field goal percentage, 48.4. And obviously we know what he brought for defense. Daniel House, he shot 41.5% from three when he got to Utah. Are they trying to put those big wing 3 and D's around Harden? I think so. And will that create something that can help out on offense? Definitely. But a lot of that contingent on what James Harden are we going to get? Are we going to get the one who couldn't blow by his defenders last season, who struggled to finish at the rim? If so, I don't think it matters. But if we get a Harden who gets more time to rest and can get past his defenders and dump it up to guys like PJ, like House, then I think, yes, this is a very good championship move.
Yeah, I think it's a strong move, too. And for all the reasons that Holden laid out, I think getting PJ Tucker is a big deal, you know. He's really old, but, again, like I mentioned, Patrick Beverly, he's a big-time culture guy. And he's won a chip already with the Bucks. You know, his defense on Kevin Durant, it might have been overstated on how great it was, but it made a difference, obviously. And sometimes perception is all you need, because you can psych out the opponent and whatnot. And,
right.
I think PJ Tucker, especially at his advanced age, which is funny to say, but his advanced NBA age, he's still able to do other things that you would want him to do, what you're paying him to do. And Daniel House, like Owen was saying, is just a good shooter. Because, if someone like James Harden is always – he's not always taking it all, but whenever he takes it to the hole, he'll find the open guy, So to have just more shooters around him is great. But I think this is also going to make Joel Embiid's life a lot easier too, where he does – even on defense, where he doesn't have to – always have to go for every rebound because – Tucker will, do some fighting there as well. So I think it's a strong move. I think it does move the Sixers up a level. If, like Holden says, James Harden comes in, in shape, dedicated and focused.
Well, do you think it's a good sign that he did decide he did go for the team friendly renegotiation there? So if I'm a Philly fan right now, does that make me feel a little bit better that we might get sort of the Harden of old? Now, William isn't here tonight, and one of his favorite things, Dennis, is ragging on James Harden not being a champion, not mm-hmm. having the heart of a champion, not having the dedication of a champion. Do you think that this willingness of Harden to take a contract that he, like you said, he could have just gone for the money grab, like Holden said, if you're a Philly fan, is that something that you're like, hey, man, this gives me a little bit of encouragement here. I think this might be a good sign heading into 22-23.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great sign because if he's not taking the money and he's reworking his contract, for multiple years and he's taking less than what he could actually make, to me that's saying that he wants to win a chip. Mm-hmm. So not only financially, if you want to win a chip, you're not just thinking about that aspect. You're thinking about the physical aspect.
Right.
So it's like, damn, I'm getting older. I want to win the chip. I'm going to come in shape, And I always mention this. As a Nets fan, that pisses me off. So that means it's a great thing for Philadelphia 76ers fans.
You're right. And that East is going to be interesting to watch in this upcoming season because the next team we're going to talk about is a winner in free agency, the Celtics. Now, it's not necessarily that they made a ton of moves, but what's interesting about them is they kept the pieces that went they largely kept all the pieces that took them to the finals against the Warriors, and they added Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah.
Dennis, since you bothered to correct me, tell me about Brogdon and what he brings to the Celtics, and is it enough to get them past that little bit of a hump? Now, when we talked about the finals, we said, look, this is a good experience, believe it or not, that they got to the finals and lost for these young Celtics because they're going to learn from it. They're going to be mentally tougher because of it. They know what it takes to get the trophy. So, Brogdon plus the experience, what are we looking at with the Celtics?
I love Malcolm Brogdon. I thought that when I saw that he signed with the Boston Celtics, I was like, damn, because it will make them better. There's no question about it.
Right.
Brogdon is just like basketball IQ is like at a high level, able to score, take it to the rim and shoot it from the outside. He can pass the ball, great defense. I mean, it's just perfect, you know. Now I just wonder who's going to start. You know, is it going to be him or is it going to be Marcus Smart? Is it going to be both of them and you slide Jaylen Brown to the three? But I just think overall the addition of, like, Malcolm Brogdon just kicks ass. Alden, how do you feel?
I think that it just gives them another ball handler, right? It takes the pressure off of Brown, off of Tatum, off of Smart to give it to a point guard who's probably second best ability behind scoring is to play me. And like you were saying, the dilemma of who's starting, Smart or Brogdon, I think that they can possibly create another lineup of death here. Smart, Brogdon, Brown, Tatum, and then Time Lord at the five. No one's outrunning that team.
Maybe who's Time Lord for the people that I don't know?
Robert Williams III, and they call him Time Lord because he was always late to practice freshman year. freshman year of the NBA. Said that like he was in high school. But I think the biggest loss in this trade is going to be the first rounder because it's always going to be maybe, but the most definite biggest loss is going to be Daniel Tice, who I call Foul Lord because I feel like he fouls out of every single game he plays, but he was replaced easily by Danilo Gallinari. So I think Boston only got exponentially better with now a true point guard that can play the one. You want him at the two. Maybe you want Smart to play one to defend their best guard. I think that's a possibility. And Boston, they just got a big win out of this.
And from what I understand, guys, Brogdon also fits in that sort of switching, tough defense the Celtics played, right? So that it doesn't matter who's ball handling on the other end and who's, you know, who's bringing the ball up, who's posting. It doesn't matter because the Celtics have all these pieces that just switch very easily, and they play that sort of that really rugged defense that we saw in the finals. So Brogdon fits into that mold, right? He's like the perfect complement, like you said. Not just offensively, but on the defensive end, he doesn't mind getting dirty and scrapping and switching and the whole nine yards, right?
I mean, you look at him and, you know, he's a big body. It's not like he's one of the smaller point guards, you know what I mean? He'll be able to handle anybody in the post. And, you know, I just got to say, you know, Holden mentioned the first rounder. Now, the Celtics basically did the same thing as the Minnesota Timberwolves, but at a different level, where the Timberwolves really aren't ready to contend, so why make that trade for a playmaker or a difference maker like Gobert? But the Celtics, they're obviously they're contending. They were just in the NBA Finals. So you do give up like a future pick, you know, even if it's next year or whenever it is, because you're ready to contend right now. So Boston Celtics, you know, Brad Stevens, great, great, great move. Give it up to Brad Stevens, GM of the Boston Celtics.
There you go. That East is going to look rough, absolutely. Now, those are the winners I kind of had, and we talked about the Jazz and the Wolves. Is there another team you felt that I haven't mentioned that comes out on the winning end of the free agency / trade period here? Let's start off with Holden. Any team that's ruminating around that head of yours saying, hey, these guys did pretty well this so far?
Honestly, there's not one team where I look at an addition and I would say yes, besides maybe the Denver Nuggets and Bruce Brown. Obviously, I saw Bruce Brown the entire season. With the Nuggets, they're getting back Jamal Murray and they're getting back MPJ. Now you add Bruce Brown, who was the third best player in the Brooklyn Nets for basically the entire season, who can give you that defense, who was forced into that role in the Nets. He developed that perimeter defense to a legitimate level. He has the corner three. He can hit those floaters. That is definitely very big time for the Nuggets, who look to possibly contend now. We'll see how that plays out, but they definitely have the pieces to be a legitimate team. Dennis, what about you? Do you feel like anybody could?
All right, so first of all, you know, it sounds weird when my son calls me by my name, but
I wasn't going to say anything, man. I didn't know
what we were doing here. Father, Dennis,
no, we keep it professional. I don't know if they're necessarily winners, but I would say the Knicks when they signed Isaiah Hartenstein, because Isaiah Hartenstein is a great shooting big. I know that he would basically fit in on any team, and you know, to get that shooting is going to be great for them whenever he plays. And I say whenever he plays because they also re-signed Mitchell Robinson,
right.
who plays the same position. Obviously, different type of player, more about rebounds, blocking shots, and dunking the ball. But, you know, it's the Knicks. They'll mess it up somehow. But I'll give it up to them for signing Isaiah Hartenstein.
Well, you know what's interesting is, and let's just flow into it then, from the sentiment I've been feeling that I've seen, you know, looking at the different blogs and news sites and everything and opinion things, is that the Knicks really – they're not you're not getting the vibe that they're winners so far. Nah. Now they added Jalen Brunson, right? But even that may cost them because they may get hit with a tampering charge, right? And
right.
I don't even know how solid or unsolid that is, but it's the type of thing that who was it, the Mavs, if they decide to pursue it, they may actually get a pick out of it or something, right? But overall, you mentioned Hartenstein and the Knicks as possible winners. I don't know. Do you agree with your dad there, Holden? Do you think the Knicks come out as winners? Are they treading water? Are they just solid moves? What's your feel on the Knicks here?
I think this is more of a TBA, but I'm leaning more towards a loss because the way I look at it is they're going to owe Brunson and Robinson $164 million. Mm. With an R.J. Barrett probably max extension looming. So that'll be around $300 million between those three. Is that worth it? I don't think so. But the reason I say TBA is because now you look at the Knicks, they have extremely tradable, lucrative pieces. And I hate to say it because I'm a Nets fan. Barrett, Obi Toppin, Emmanuel Quickly, Cam Reddish, the three first-rounders they got, albeit they're very protected. So, do they want to do what the Nets did before they traded for KD and or signed KD and Kyrie, be a competitive team with a good culture? They could do it, and then they have the trade pieces to maybe get a disgruntled star elsewhere. They have the pieces. Will that happen? I don't know, but
yeah, I guess you can say they have the pieces, depending on how you look at Toppin and Quickly, who I don't look at. As highly as some other people, otherwise, you know, I would say wouldn't Thibodeau play them more then? The culture's all messed up. There's no way you can top that Nets culture when they had like D'Lo and Spencer Dinwiddie and Theo Pinson dancing on the bench. You had an old ass man in Jared Dudley dancing on the bench. So you're never going to beat that culture. But Holden's right. They do have some pieces where they can try to go big. But the Knicks have never, ever signed a big free agent.
Hmm.
They had a chance from LeBron James in 2010. They had to sell for Amari Stoudemire. I mean, it's not a bad consolation prize, but they never, ever get the big free agent. You would think they would because they're in New York, but it doesn't happen. So
is that a franchise decision or is it just that? People
nobody don't. Wants to be with
I was,
the
I was
Knicks.
Going to say nobody wants to play for the Knicks.
Because of the owner.
That's what I was going to say. So it's like you said, it's counterintuitive. You would think people, if for no other reason than the branding opportunities, the marketing opportunity of playing in Madison Square Garden, being in the Big Apple, usually that's enough to get some guys, even if you get the guys who are only out for the money grab, right? But for whatever reason, like you said, it's been a while. Like, who was it? Marcus Camby, Stoudemire? Like, I'm searching the cobwebs of whatever's left in here to figure out the last one they had, right? But to your point, they just have this horrible rep. Nobody wants to play for them.
Except for Jalen Brunson, who this was definitely a money play. Holden, do you think they overpaid for him?
All right, look at it this way. Brunson is 25. He performed very well with Luka on the court, and he performed even better with Luka off the court. Is he the point guard of your future? For $104 million, I'm going to say no. But I'm not going to discount him right away because he has the skills. He's been growing exponentially as a player. So maybe he continues to do that in New York. That's yet to be determined. And I don't think, I don't think they will create a culture there just because, like you said, it's all messed up. But they do have the pieces to be competitive, and who knows? Maybe they move one first star. But as for Brunson, he's going to ball out, let's be honest. But for his price tag, I don't know.
No, not for his price tag. No way. Definitely overpay over there. And that's where you get the Knicks on the losing side.
Yeah, it does seem to be a theme so far that we've talked about, that even though a player might be a good fit, might be the right fit for a team, that it's just the market is driving these prices up, and you're going to end up paying for it. Let's round out the East before we close out the loser section. The Heat, they lost Tucker. They might lose Harrow. What's going on with the Heat?
I hope they don't lose Tyler Hero, because if they do, that means the Brooklyn Nets took him. And he is not a centerpiece to a Kevin Durant trade. Centerpiece to a Kevin Durant trade with the Heat would be Bam Adebayo. But because of a collective bargaining rule, you can't have two players on a extended rookie max contract, right, on one team. The Nets already have Ben Simmons. So because they traded for him from the 76ers, they can't get Bam Adebayo, who signed one with the Heat, unless they trade Ben Simmons.
Right.
Which I hope they don't do. Let's see what the young guy can do. But if they trade Tyler Hero, that means Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra will be dancing in the streets naked the minute that happens.
Yeah. But so, Holden, look, the Heat, tough team. Scrappy team. We said that all during the playoff run, right? We said scrappy team. How are they? You know, they were the number one overall seed. Me and your dad sat here many a show saying, how did they end up the number one seed? Like, we couldn't figure it out, right? It doesn't seem like they should have been the one. They didn't feel like a number one seed, but yet there they were. They took the Celtics to the limit in the conference finals, right? There's another team that you could have said to yourself, much like the Celtics, all right, they're a scrappy team. They play a good team game. What pieces do they need? You know, obviously, I thought they needed another shooter, given how that series against the Celtics went. That when Hero went down, it was like, okay, you know, Jimmy Butler can't, you know, it's playing 5-on-1 basically. How did the Heat do here? Are they big losers? Did they take a step back? What do you see happening with the Heat here?
Yes, they definitely took a step back. They're already missing someone who can score the ball that's not named Tyler or Jimmy. or maybe give Kyle Lowry a few years back on his life.
On his life?
Give him 27-year-old Kyle Lowry. They'll be all right. But we can't do that. I think losing PJ, who is probably the second – toughest person on the roster behind Butler, right, is a very big deal. He was the one diving for the balls. He was the one who was gathering the team, grabbing their players by the jersey, bringing them in the huddle. He was Pat Riley on the court. So I think losing him is very, very bad for Tucker, for the Heat. Because you look, when Tucker entered free agency, every contender was calling his phone, and that's for a reason.
Right, right. No, I feel you. I don't think they did anything to improve themselves. And like you said, that loss kind of knocks them down. Like, now you're not looking at them and the Celtics fighting again to get to the finals. Now you're looking at them fighting to get past Philly, to get past Boston, you know, and Milwaukee. So you're like, yeah, I don't think they really got that far. Let's turn out to your guys' team, the Nets. Now, this whole story has nothing to do with acquisitions and losses, right? Right now, it's got to do with the whole soap opera around Irving, Durant, to a lesser extent, Simmons, right? What's going on? Like, Dennis, why don't you give me a recap?
Irving. Me, what's going on?
You always seem to know. Irving and Durant, what's going on? What's going on, bro?
Irving, he took his player option because the Nets, played chicken with them. They're like, okay, so you don't want to be with us anymore. That's fine. You know what? We'll let you go out there and try to get a sign and trade with any team you want. Right. Only one team wanted him, and that was
the
Los Angeles Lakers. But Irving didn't do it because
the Nets would have to take Westbrook back, right?
No. They would have to take Westbrook back, and the Nets were not going to do that.
Right, exactly.
So Kyrie Irving lost that one. So it's like, you know what? I'm just going to take my player option just so I can get a guaranteed $30 million as opposed to making only $6 million with the Los Angeles Lakers, if the Nets just said, oh, yeah, forget it. You know, we're just going to let you go. Right. As far as Kevin Durant goes, who knows, you know. I will say this. I love Kevin Durant as a player. Mm-hmm. He's always been one of my favorite players. But with this whole situation, he definitely takes – not that he would ever care, but he takes a hit and he goes down like two or three rungs on the ladder because it just shows me that he's just not a leader. You know what I mean?
Well, right. His legacy, not as a performance on the court, but to your point, that legacy of like, are they all just spoiled brats at this point? Is there no one willing to say, I'm the alpha male on this team and I'm going to take this team to the next level? You know, like how many of those guys are left in the NBA? You know, it's
Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, very few, you know, and that's what I'm trying to get at. You would think that Durant might have been one of those guys, right? But obviously, no. Now, is there, Holden, you covered the net, is there any chance this is some sort of, I don't even know how to describe it in a positive way for Durant because he's still got 4 years on his contract. So it's not, this is a negotiation move, you know, it's not a salary move, I don't think. Like, is there any positive way to spin what we're hearing about Durant?
No.
No,
honestly, it's just pure frustration at this point from Kevin. Right. And I really don't blame him. The front office has failed to put a team around him. Players have failed to stay healthy. I'm looking at you, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving. It just has not worked out. So I don't blame him for his frustration. Reports have come out that he told Joey Tsai, our owner, to his face, oh, I'm leaving. I want to trade. Joey did not tell Sean Marks, a general manager, and Sean Marks made a trade, the Royce O'Neal trade, thinking Kevin Durant was still on the roster.
Mm.
So the communication in the front office has not been there, and that is obviously frustrating for someone who sees it every day. Yes. So from that standpoint, I don't blame Kevin. But as Dennis was saying, I tried to ignore all the people saying, you know, Cupcake, he's not a leader, but I think this, to me, if it goes through, proves that he's just not a leader because right. All he has to do now is wait. We have Ben Simmons. We have Kyrie. Joe Harris is coming back. Granted, we lost Bruce Brown, but for the most part, our team's the same. We're getting Claxton. We got Royce O'Neal. We got T.J. Warren, who was a great player. We have pieces, but
right.
His patience is worn out, and, I mean, good for him for chasing what's good for him in his basketball career, but I can't look at him the same way.
No way. I mean, you look and see when he left OKC, what happened? They made it to the Western Conference Finals and they lost to the Golden State Warriors. What does he do when he's a free agent on next year? He joins the Golden State Warriors. Okay, I can overlook that. I can understand. You want to get a ring. All right, fine. But then he gets two rings. Then they make it to the NBA Finals, his final season with the Warriors. And, you know, unfortunately he was hurt, you know. And then he got a little poison in his ear from Kyrie Irving during the offseason, oh, we should join together. And he's like, yeah, you know what? Let's join together and win the chip in Brooklyn. And they actually signed him to a huge contract knowing that he wouldn't play the first year, which he didn't. Right. Thanks for the gratitude, KD. You know what I'm saying? Look, when he's healthy, he'll play. I believe that if they don't trade him, and, you know, the season started, I think KD would play with the Nets.
Right.
But this just, like, puts a sour taste in my mouth where he feels like he needs to win, right? Everybody feels that way.
Right.
But it's sort of cheap because, like, where does he want to go now?
He wants to go back to the Suns or the Warriors would probably be the
– Or actually his preference is, you know, the Heat and the Suns, right? Mm. Both of them contenders. The Suns in particular, you know, number one contender.
Right.
So it's just like, I don't think he could deal with adversity like that. You know what I mean? He's not tough.
Hey, all I know is that back in the day, could you ever imagine somebody like, say, Pippen walking up to Barkley and saying, hey, man, I'm tired of Jordan. Why don't the two of us hook up and go to New York, team up with Pat Ewing, and we'll win the championship that way? I'm sure Barkley would have punched him in his mouth. You know, there wouldn't be any like, yeah, let's do it. Let's pick a team to go to. And I mean that not just Barkley, by the way. any of those guys. Jordan would never agree to that.
Ah, forget about it.
Like, Robinson, David Robinson, Pat Ewing, John Starks, any of those guys. Isaiah Thomas, are you kidding me? Any of those Detroit guys. None of those guys would sit in the offseason, sit around the barbershop or whatever that HBO show is, and start jawing about where they could win a ring together and start manipulating it so they end up on the same team. Now, you might say, is it illegal? Is it? No. But it just goes to that point that you said that you guys are like buzzing around, which is I'm almost tempted to say it's symptomatic, and I hate to sound like the grumpy old guy. It's symptomatic of the generations now. It's like nobody wants to say I'm going to be the one to grind and be the lead here. I'm going to be the one who succeeds, and I'm going to be the one who puts a team on my back. Now, not everybody can do that, right? But where are the Jordans? And I don't mean physically. I don't mean athletically. But where are the Jordans who will say, I'll make everybody on this team better? Like, you've got me. Like, all those guys who played with Jordan, none of them were as good as they were when they played with Jordan for a lot of different reasons. But he raised their game as well, right? That's what's disappointing about guys like Harden and Durant and to some extent, like, say, Irving or somebody. It's like, where's their, like, no, man, I'm on a four-year contract. I've got 4 years on my contract left. I haven't had a chance to prove how great I am, that I can be the guy who leads a team to a chip. I want to be that guy. I want that to be my legacy. I took a broken-down, dysfunctional team, and we still got a championship. Guys, does anybody in the NBA have that drive anymore? Like, I'm not even trying to be funny with this. I'm actually looking if you guys can think of a player right now that has that drive. I mean,
off the top of my head, like I said before, Jimmy Butler.
Yeah. And
I think the second one that comes top of my mind,
Tatum.
Again, no, young guy, hasn't played 1 minute officially in the NBA regular season, and it's Chet Holmgren. For the OKC Thunder, and I say that because he had an awesome debut, and ESPN wanted to interview him, and he said, I'm not going to do my interview unless Josh Giddey is with me. Josh Giddey is, you know, second-year point guard. He had a great game also. He had a double-double. I think he had 14 points, 11 assists, right? Chet's like, no, I'm not going on unless Giddey's on. So Giddey comes on, right? So they're vibing, and then I think it was Malika Andrews said, oh, you know, you also have the NBA Summer League record for blocks. And Chet Holmgren was like, six? That's it? And she said, yeah, six. You have the record. She said, well, I want to break it again. I love that attitude.
Sure.
Let me get my teammate on with me.
Yep.
And I'm going to break the record I just got.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's why I think Chet Holmgren's, you know, I know we talked about rookies last time, but Chet Holmgren's the real deal, man. He's going to be amazing.
Love it. Love hearing that. Okay. We've kind of covered the teams, winners and losers, and what you guys feel about it, how we feel about them in general. Let's talk about some individual players. Now, not all of these players necessarily swap teams, but they may have re-signed new deals. They may have been retained on bigger deals. Let's start off with the Joker right away. Jokic, right? 5 years, $270 million. Most lucrative contract in NBA history. Holden, what's up with that? Is he worth the money?
Yes, pay him. I don't care. Whatever he wants. Give him the state. I don't care. Give him the stake in the franchise. I don't care.
Give him all of Colorado.
Yes, give him all the mountains. He's generational. No fancy words I can say can describe how good of a player Jokic is. Whatever he wants, just give it to him.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, you know, you're not back-to-back MVPs for no reason. And I know this past season there was like a debate, you know, between him and Joel Embiid.
Right.
But literally, Jokic was the first player ever to score like 10,000 points, score 2,000 points, grab 1,000 rebounds, drop 500 assists. It's like he had the highest PER, you know, that's player efficiency rating, ever for a season. So it's like, yeah, no, he's worth the money, like Holden said. Give him Colorado.
That was
give him the Rockies. Just give him the team.
Yeah. That was the easiest MVP futures bet I ever made in my life. I couldn't understand why people thought Embiid would ever overtake him for that MVP race the way – I mean, only an injury halfway through the season could have done that.
Right.
Okay, the next big contract, Bradley Beal stays in Washington, 5 years, $251 million. Let's start off with Dennis on that one.
Oh, man, Bradley Beal made out. Not only did he get all that money, he got a no-trade clause.
Wow.
So, you know – he has all of it. So if he does get traded, he needs a yes, and then he's probably going to make like $500 billion because he's getting traded. You know what I mean? Here's the thing, though, that I don't get. Like, you know, Bradley Beal talks about wanting to win and all that. He's not doing it in Washington. And now he's putting himself there for 5 years. And part of me wants to be like, man, what's wrong with you? But the other part was like, hey, I love the loyalty, you know what I mean? And you don't see that a lot. And we were talking about players that'll bring other players and make them better. I think Bradley Beal wants to do that. I don't think he's really capable of doing that.
Right.
But at least he's trying, and I give him props for that.
Yeah, I agree with you, but Holden, $251 million. I mean, there is – see, it's always this fine line. You want to keep your good players, but if you pay them too much, it hampers your ability to get them complementary pieces. So, as hokey as it sounds, there is a little bit that you need to keep as sort of like, as a player, you might want to accept a little bit less, only because it's self-serving in the sense that if you really want to get an MVP, if you really want to get a trophy, you need those complementary pieces. So, do you think guys like Beal, first of all, is Beal, do you agree with your dad, $251 million too much for Beal?
I think that it may be too much, but if you're the Wizards, if he leaves, you don't have anything else. You don't have the pieces to build around him. You would have a hard restart. Mm. So you almost are obligated to give the money to Beal. And from Beal's perspective, the first thing I thought of was, I'm doing this for my kids.
Sure.
So I think it makes sense at both ends, but I think the Wizards just will force their hand because – what else can they really do?
And listen, to that point, you're right. Sometimes there's no good solution. You just got to pick one. There's no perfect solution. There's no that much better solution. They let them go. Like you said, they're starting over again. You keep them, you hamper yourself. You're sort of like, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. So, yeah, that's a tough one. Now, we talked about Gobert on the T-Wolves. Carl Anthony Towns, 4 years, $224 million. So think of the money that's tied up between Gobert and, what's that, like close to half a billion, if not more, between Towns and Gobert. But specifically the Towns, Holden, so 4 years, $224 million. Give me your thoughts.
He's a perennial All-NBA player at this point. He can do it all. He can shoot, he can dribble, he can play defense, he can do everything. He's homegrown, you know, he didn't sign here from somewhere else. Rebound, the pass, I mean, he's worth the money. And if you do think you're contending now, which it appears that the Timberwolves do, then you have to pay him, considering he is the best player on your team.
Yeah, you know, it was a no-brainer. But there is going to be, like, a ton of money, you know, not even just with Gobert and Carl Anthony Towns, but, you know, D'Lo's making, like, $31 million also. So, you're cash-strapped. They're lucky that Anthony Edwards is only, like, going to be a third-year player, but he's going to be up for his rookie max, too, and he's earned that, you know, easily. You know, maybe it's good they're not getting future first-round picks because they won't be able to afford them.
They won't be able to afford to pay them. They got to get by with scrubs and fill out the roster, yeah. All right, next one on the list, Devin Booker. Almost the exact same deal as Towns, 4 years, $224 million.
Yeah, they came in at the same time, so, you know, that only makes sense. Both of them have both performed really well. And the reason why they're able to get this much money is because the way that, you know, these max contracts work is if you make an All-NBA team, if you're like an MVP, you know, so, you know, same thing with Jokic. But Devin Booker, you know, a lot of people say that the next Kobe, if there is a next Kobe, is Devin Booker. So
you mean the selfish guy who won't pass the ball?
No. What are you talking about? Sorry. Kobe is averaging almost 6 assists a game. And if he had to, because, 5 defenders were on him. But
not the way Shaq tells it. Not the way Shaq tells it.
Oh, how does Shaq tell it? No, I'm kidding. We talked about that last time. But Devin Booker, he's a great player. Is he worth that much? No player is worth that much unless you're LeBron James or Michael Jordan. But in today's climate, yeah, he was worth it. And thank goodness he broke up with not Kardashian, but Kendall Jenner.
Yeah.
So let's get the curse off. And maybe the Suns can actually win the NBA Finals.
There you go. John Morant, 5 years, $193 million. Who wants to take that one? Holden, you like that one. Yes.
Young superstar, face of the franchise. But I'm throwing in a but here, and this is going to be somewhat surprising for people. I have one big thing that I'm very concerned about for John Morant. You see the Derrick Rose comparisons all the time. What does he do that is very similar to Derrick Rose that scares me? The way he lands off of dunks, the way he lands off of layups. I'm going to get into this when we talk about another player signing an extension. But he lands so violently that every time he lands, it's on that one foot, and I'm scared. I think he's one bad landing away from a Derrick Rose-esque injury where he's not the same player. And I hate to say it because I don't want to be right with this, but I think he is one very bad landing away, which this contract could be ending up very bad. So I think that, yes, it's a great play. If Ja does not get hurt, this is a great contract. Hell, I'd give him more money if I could. But just this play style, it concerns me.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that. That's definitely a concern. And, the Derrick Rose comparisons does go all the way through, even landing on the one foot. I'm always scared for players that are athletically based. In terms of long-term contracts. I have no problem with KD getting it because he's not athletically based at all. But Ja Morant, the way he goes up, even, it's kind of the Allen Iverson comparisons too. But Ja Morant, he doesn't have that outside shot like Iverson did. And Iverson shot 40% from the outside, which is horrible. But he was always able to get the shot up and, draw defenders and pass the ball. I think the second best thing about Ja Morant after his dunks is his floater. But again, you're landing on that knee. So, you have to be concerned about that. But you hope, and I hope, because, I live in the Memphis area now and I'm going to games. You hope that he's healthy. But if last year was an indicator, where he missed a lot of games, you don't know. Is he worth the money, though? Yes, because he's going to draw people into the seats. He's going to get the NBA ratings and whatnot. But, Ja, if you're watching, if you're listening, listen to what Holden said, man. Change the way that you land, man. Play in the NBA for a long time, please.
And send you my address, too, for tickets, by the way.
Yeah.
And he also seems like a good kid in the sense that he's somebody that the NBA PR squad can love and promote and have him out front promoting the league and the game. I also heard he's a good guy. I heard he gave a very good recommendation for a friend of mine who was going to a job interview, too. But next guy up, Zion Williamson. Now, here's an interesting case. Zion Williamson agreed to a 5-year extension that could reach as high as $231 million with incentives. But here's where, again, you kind of do this every time you read something like this. In 3 seasons, he's only played 85 games. So you're giving up $231 million on a 5-year contract to a guy who in 3 years has averaged less than 30 games a season. Dennis, this to me, I don't care how good he is, potentially even, this sounds like insanity to me. This much money to a guy who just hasn't been able to stay on the court, and maybe there's whispers, maybe it's because he doesn't really work hard to get back on the court. I don't know. What do you make of this?
Well, again, like I mentioned before, I get wary about giving athletically based players long-term contracts, and Zion Williamson is definitely athletic based right now. But I know that Holden feels a certain way about this, so I'm going to let him go and rip.
And before Holden rips, let me make sure. When you say athletically based, you mean that their entire game is predicated on just being a better athlete than their opponent. It's not that they're students of the game, that they've mastered moves or counter moves or anything like that, right? You're just saying like, hey, I can run faster, jump higher, and I'm stronger than you. That's what my game is based on right now. And you're saying that type of player,
right?
You don't guarantee a long-term contract.
Well, predominantly, you know, because Ja Morant is one of the most skilled players in the NBA. He definitely has counters. He definitely has a dribble, a great skill set. But he is athletically based, meaning that a lot of his shots are, you know, him jumping higher than the other guy. You know what I mean? Zion jumping higher than another guy. So that's what I mean by athletically based. And we can let Holden rip right now.
Go ahead, Holden.
Yes, thank you. I don't know if you saw, but I kind of jumped when you said Zion because I got a whole laundry list here of statistics that I want to throw at this man. No disrespect, though.
Yeah.
So I'm going to scare NBA fans away. Greg Oden, right? You said Zion in the first three seasons played 85. Greg Oden played 82. So that's not too far off. But here's the big difference. In those first three seasons, player A, Zion Williamson, 26 points per game, 7 rebounds, 60%. Greg Oden, not even 10, 7.3, 60. So the comparison play-wise on the court, it's not even close. Zion's a better player. But the injury is the concern. You know, he had the knee injury when he was in Duke back in 2019 when his shoe burst. The torn meniscus that caused him to miss nearly his entire rookie year. The broken foot that kept him out this whole year, right? I think it comes down to a matter of injury-prone versus durability. Injury-prone, in my opinion, is where you put yourself in a situation where you have a higher chance of being injured. Like I was just saying, the Rose, the Morants, those violent landings that Zion is even worse at because he has so much more mass coming down when he lands.
Right.
Then it becomes a question of durability. Usually you can kind of tell it out, but he just turned 22 today. Today is his birthday. July 6th is his birthday. He just turned 22. He had three very serious injuries. So his durability is not going to be all there. Now you're telling me you want to sign him for $230 million up to? I don't know about that. We know the player he is on the court, but he's not proved to me as a GM that he is worth that money because he cannot stay at that point. And again, he is only 22 when we've had all of these injuries already. If he was 27, 28, that's a little different. But he's just turned 22.
Yeah, and generally speaking, and I mean, you guys would probably know a lot more than I do, but generally speaking, if a player at that early in his career is getting injured every season, I don't think it gets better as you get older. You know, it's not like something you grow out of. It's not something that you get coached out of or anything like that. It's just, like you said, whether it's a violent style of playing, whether it's like his body can't stand up to the strain, to the freakish athleticism he has, you know, that's also something. It's very rare. Like, the only athlete I could think of who was constantly injured off the top of my head, I'd have to look at someone like Frank Gore, like in football. Like, he came out of college with two busted knees. He got hurt in the NFL. And then after his rookie year, he lasted as long as he did. And he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's the only guy I could think of that was constantly injured in college and initially in the NFL and then turned it around for whatever reason, whether it was luck, training, whatever. I can't think of anybody else, especially in the NBA. Can you guys think of anybody who started off with this, like, the first three, four seasons of his career, constantly injured, never on the court, and then all of a sudden, boom, hey, now I'm doing 80 games a year and 80 games a season, and I'm steady and I'm improving. I can't think of anybody.
No, I can't think of anybody either. You know, and the only way that he lasts throughout that whole contract, right, you know, staying healthy to a high degree, is if you change your game like Michael Jordan did. Mm. Now, Michael Jordan, obviously, we all know that, you know, he's your airness, right? We all know the dunks, that's what made him famous and whatnot. But after all of that, all the beatings that he took, taking it to the hole, what did he do? He changed his game.
Right.
He was in the post, Jordan fadeaway. Mm. You know, he did the same thing, Kobe Bryant. You know, Bryant fadeaway. That's why everyone, like, you know, back in the, I guess, the early aughts, the 2010s, whenever, like, someone was taking a shot, throwing out the garbage, they'd say, Kobe.
Still right. Do it.
Yeah. He changed his game.
Right.
Will Zion Williamson change his game? I mean, I don't know. He can. I think he can if he really wants to. I mean, he's a professional athlete. But, you know, that's going to be up to him. You know, it's not up to me. You know, I wish it was.
But I think in the case of Jordan and Bryant, it was guys aging into a wisdom that said, I can't do this forever. I can't play that type of game and have an extended career. I think that's a maturity that comes with being in the league long enough and also performing at a certain level.
Right.
I think Williamson's never had that success that he thought he would have coming out of Duke. So he's like, is he mature enough to say, I got to reinvent myself before I even experience any success as myself? Look, to be fair to him, that's a tough ask for anybody to say, you know, like, hey, I'm a banker. Banks are going down the drain. Let me reinvent myself as an insurance salesman. It might be the smart thing to do, but it's not easy. And to get to that realization, it's not easy. And so I'm not saying it to rag on Zion because I just think it's a very tough thing. And to your point, Dennis and Hold, can he do it? I think if he was 28, to your point, and he says, hey, I've been getting beat up these past 6 years. Let me take some of my accumulated experience and knowledge, and maybe I'll develop a fadeaway or a skyhook or something. Excuse me. Can he do it? I don't know.
I mean, I don't have too much faith because, you know, coming out of, you know, Duke, there was a lot of talk about him. Oh, man, you lose some weight so you can, like, lessen the load on your knees and whatnot. And then, obviously, he ballooned while he was injured, which everybody does, granted. However, if you're a professional athlete and you're a superstar like Zion Williams, a superstar, why won't you just hire a dietitian? You know, dietitians know ways where you can still get all the food that you love to eat, but, you know, the smaller portions, you know what I mean?
Why don't the Pels do it for him?
Yeah, no, that's true, too. I mean, they're investing in him, you know? So, but, you know, again, you can't change anyone. It's up to them to do it, you know what I mean?
I'd have Oprah's chef follow him around. He seems to have done wonders with her.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Last guy on the list before we wrap up, Darius Garland agreed to 5 years, $193 million, which is – and it could get as high as 231 if he makes any All-NBA team. And that is the biggest contract in Cavs history. So, Dennis, what do you think of that? Darius Garland.
Well, it's funny when you say that's the biggest contract in Cavs history because you would think LeBron James
right.
Did.
Right.
But yeah, no, Darius Garland is, you know, definitely, I would say their best player right now. You know, long term, it's probably going to be Evan Mobley, you know, even Jared Allen to, you know, some degree. But no, Darius Garland stepped up his game once Colin Sexton got injured. And Colin Sexton got injured very early. And Sexton was a 20 point scorer. Garland stepped up, and he not only lifted up his stats, but he lifted up the whole Cavs team. You know, of course, he had Jared Allen, Caris LeVert, and Evan Mobley, but he was a leader. Is he deserving of this contract? This is like one of those contracts where it's like, probably not, but I'm all for it. You know what I mean? It's like, go, Darius. You know, get your money, DG. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm happy for the guy, and yeah, I think he's pretty much worth it because of what he's done and what he means to the team.
Holden.
If I'm putting on my GM hat, personally, it's one of those things. It's like you kind of have to give him the contract. I would personally rather see him another year to see if he can repeat what he did this year. Because if he does not improve at all, he's not worth it. But he's going to improve. He's a dog. He's the real deal. But will he live up to $190 million? We'll see. If he makes the All-NBA team, yes, then he's deserving of the 230. So I think it's more of a time will tell. But kind of like with Bradley Beal, I think the Cavs' hands were tied, and you just have to give him the money.
And again, like you said, I love him, love his play style, so I'm happy for him.
Yeah, and I just gotta say, like, a lot of people, like, Darius Garland came out of college as, like, one of the best college players, and he's not a number four pick for nothing. You know what I mean? He had Chris Paul comparisons coming out of college. And is he going to be Chris Paul? No one's ever going to be Chris Paul. But Darius Garland, like, I would say he's like a CP3 light. You know, he's like a CP1.5. You know what I mean?
All right. So it sounds like you guys are on board with that Darius Garland signing. So, okay, great. Listen, it's wrap-up time. I had a great time talking NBA free agency period right now with possibly the first father-son team in podcast history. So very happy to be part of that. I hope you guys enjoyed yourselves. Remember, join us again next week for the next episode of the Brady Bunch right here on sportsgrumblings.com. Actually, we're talking about points on the board, of course. Ha ha. Don't worry about my bad sense of humor here. But sportsgrumblings.com, check out all our podcasts on the site. But until next time, this has been Big John for DV and Holden Velasco. Don't forget, check out Dennis Velasco, basketball, SOM, at substack.com. And Holden, you can catch him covering the Nets for Nets Daily over at SB Nation. Until next time, peace.